Our next guest is, he's been known or become known. I call him America's historian. You know, he kind of poo-poos that. But who else brings to life our history kind of like William? I mean, nobody tells a story quite like William. Maybe Mark Twain, but he's dead. So we got William Federer on so many areas, just fantastic. AmericanMinute.com is his website. He's written over 20 books. He speaks over 100 cities a year. He's well-renowned throughout the country. He's been on just about any major media that you can imagine, from New York Times, USA Radio Network, NPR, and The Power Hour. We're so glad to have him. William, welcome back to The Power Hour.
Oh, great to be with you.
Yes. A lot of hot topics. Certainly, Virginia is. And people are saying this, and they're saying that, and they're making justifications. Why don't we get a little history involved in this situation with guns in Virginia, maybe for America? Give us a little history lesson about guns and kind of this debate that we're discussing now.
Sure. Well, the most common form of government in world history is kings, pharaohs, Caesar, Kaiser, Sultan, Tsars. And as the centuries go on, the kingdoms get bigger, because with military advancements, you can kill more people. But it's that same fall of nature of Cain killing Abel. Just instead of using a stone, you're using a bronze weapon or an iron weapon. And then finally, the King of England had the largest empire that the planet had ever seen, 13 million square miles and half a billion people. Anyway, America decided to break away and flip it and make the people the king. And one of the quotes from Joel Barlow, he was one of the ambassadors, and worked under George Washington. But he said, a people that legislate for themselves ought to be in the habit of protecting themselves. And so he advocated that the people be universally armed. Now, what's the situation? Well, throughout history, only kings had weapons. The common people didn't. And kings had armies, and they would obey the king's will. And so the first instance we have in recorded history of a nation with no king, it's ancient Israel, when they came out of Egypt around 1400 BC. And for 400 years, Israel had no king, no royal family to butter up next to, no king with a standing army. And in ancient Israel, every single man was in the militia and armed and ready at a moment's notice to defend his family and his community. So when we draw things from the Judeo-Christian past, there are things that are in addition to just the religious aspect of it. And so E.C. Wines, he wrote in 1853 on the ancient Hebrews, he said, Moses' constitution made no provision for a standing army. The whole body of citizens formed a national guard for defense. Thus, the landholders, and every Israelite was a landholder, also formed the only soldiery known to the Mosaic Constitution. So everybody owned land, and everybody had a weapon. So the Denver University Law Review had an article by David Koppel in 2013 titled Ancient Hebrew Militia Law. He writes, New Englanders intensely self-identified with ancient Israel. And, of course, they did because they taught Hebrew at Yale and Harvard. They were looking back to ancient Israel. He goes on to say, New Englanders identified with ancient Israel from the first days of the settlement in the 17th century to the days of the American Revolution. He talked about, thus, the Hebrew militia law is part of the intellectual background of the American militia system, or the Second Amendment. So he goes on, in ancient Israel, every male from the age of 20 years and up, all those in Israel who were able to bear arms, were obliged to fight and to go forth to armed battle. Men who failed this duty sinned against the Lord. He goes on, although God may work miracles, the righteous may never force God's hand by demanding a miracle, putting good people in danger and expecting God to protect them. Israel's military system was based on the duty of every able-bodied male to bear arms and serve. Now, this was so much incorporated into America that it was this idea that you had your city councilman, your town clerk, right? Well, when you went to do militia training, the city councilman was your captain, the town clerk was your lieutenant. It was the same people. And actually, in Britain, they had a form of this, right? So that was one of the dilemmas during World War One, the Battle of the Somme, S-O-M-M-E. So everybody in England, they would train with their neighbors. They would, you know, march and practice military stuff with their neighbors, and then they would go to war with their neighbors. Well, the invention of the machine gun wiped out entire regiments. And so you have entire towns back in England that after the war, there were no males. And so they decided wow. after that, that once you actually went and got deployed, you would get mixed up amongst everybody else so that you wouldn't have the tragedy of entire towns with no men left. But it was this idea in ancient Israel that you had rulers over tens, rulers over 50s, rulers over 100. They were your, you know, your city councilmen, so to speak, but also when you went to battle, they were your captains and your lieutenants. So this idea, there's a quote from George Orwell in 1941. He said, "A million British working men now have rifles in their bedrooms and don't in the least wish, to give them up." And so it was called the Home Guard. And during World War II, we had that in America. If you remember the movie Jimmy Stewart and It's a Wonderful Life, and his brother goes off to be the war hero. And what's Jimmy Stewart? Well, during the war, he's the Home Guard, right? So he puts on a helmet and, you know, marches around the neighborhood. But it's this idea that everybody in the neighborhood's armed, and they're all training, and they're all ready at a moment's notice to fight. It's not just your government militia. And so it's a decentralized system of power. And so in the ancient Israel, every man had a sword upon their thigh, and they were ready at a moment's notice to defend their family and their community.
Wow. Let me ask you a couple.
Does this make sense?
Yeah, of course. This is fantastic. Let me ask you a couple questions. Kind of, you're bringing up some things. One, isn't it true that basically, more or less, an invasion of the Japanese army was diverted because they said, no, it'll never work because there'll be a blade of grass behind every, or a gun behind every blade of grass?
Right. So some of the generals in the Japanese military had actually gone to school in America. And the story you're talking about was the different generals were in Japan were talking about not only taking Hawaii, but then taking California. And the generals that had gone to school in America voiced that in America, every single citizen owned a weapon. And you may be able to defeat their military, but you can't defeat the entire population.
Wow.
And so, yes, it was definitely a deterrent. One of the other things that is interesting when you study American history, and that's when the Constitution was written, it needed to be ratified by 9 states. And so in 1788, 8 states had ratified it. And New Hampshire was in line to be the 9th, but it was having a deadlock. And so Harvard President Samuel Langdon gives the delegates at the New Hampshire Ratifying Convention an address. The title of the address is "The Republic of the Israelites, an Example to the American States." And so he says, "The Israelites may be considered as a pattern to the world in all ages of government on Republican principles." So our founders did, in fact, look back to ancient Israel, their model of government before King Saul. It's called the Hebrew Republic, and every person was armed. And so in New Hampshire, they ratified the U.S. Constitution, but they put their understanding down in the letter that they sent back to Congress saying, yes, we approved it, and this is our understanding of it. And when it came to the subject of the Second Amendment, the New Hampshire delegates wrote, their understanding was that Congress, this is a quote, "Congress shall never disarm any citizen." And
wow.
So this
wow.
is clear. It's not the idea, well, you know, it's just militia, it's just the, you know, the government, the, you know, the state governments, the city governments. No, this is the citizen. And the idea of a
I didn't know that.
Is,
I didn't know that point, and that's an important point, because my next question was going to be, we hear so many voices trying to tell us what the Second Amendment means or what it doesn't mean or how it can change or how this doesn't apply to present day. The Second Amendment is pretty darn clear if you know anything about history. Would you agree with that?
Right. If you know the history, the colonists, the from the colonial era, you know, you can even go back to Europe. So here you have the Muslims are invading. You have Charles Martel stopping them at the Battle of Tours. Charles Martel's grandson is Charlemagne. He basically becomes the king of Europe, a Holy Roman Emperor. Charlemagne, though, didn't have a centralized model because he didn't collect everybody's taxes and then pay for an army and send it all out. He basically made that all the little kingdoms under his protection had to foot the bill for their own defense, which meant that they got to own their own guns, which then meant that they could later grow in size and break away and become independent. And so this idea of individuals owning guns is also tied together with the idea of independence. And so it's interesting how the ACLU tries to rewrite the Constitution when it says, you know, the right of the people, you know, to possess arms. And they say, well, that's just for the militia. And if the definition of the people is the militia, then when it says we the people of the Constitution, it should say we the militia. When it's, you know, it says the right of the people to peaceably assemble, it should be say the right of the militia to peaceably assemble. And so when the people means the people, it's a rhetorical counterpart to the government.
I mean, you're a historian. I'm not asking you to. I'm just baffled by this. I'm so frustrated that the Bill of Rights is so systematically ignored today. I mean, it is the supreme law of the land. I'm just dumbfounded. I'm not asking to make a political statement, but I mean, how in the world could politicians with a straight face say, how can the ACLU even say these things? Are they stupid? Are they conspirators? Do they not like the Republic? I mean, I mean, how in the world can they say these things about gun ownership? It was the thing that sparked the American Revolution.
Right. Well, the ACLU is the most undemocratic group in the country. What do you mean, undemocratic group? Right. So you can have the people in a state overwhelmingly say that they want to identify marriage as a man or woman, or they want to outlaw partial birth abortion, or they want to, you know, have English be the language. You know, so the majority of the people can say this is what we want. The ACLU comes in and has one person that's offended and say, we're going to take the view of the one and we're going to shove it down the throat of everybody else. In other words, we don't care of the people, by the people, and for the people. We don't care what the people want. We're pushing our agenda. It's an agenda of taking away the say of the people, concentrating it into the hands of fewer and fewer people who have their position that they want enforced. And so, yes, you do want to disarm the people, and that's why the ACLU does bring these lawsuits. It's interesting, even when you go back to the ancient Greeks and ancient Romans. So there was a Roman historian, Livy, L-I-V-Y, and he said, formerly during the reign of Rome's king Tullius, which was 578 to 535 B.C., the right to bear arms had belonged only to the patricians. The patricians were the upper class. The plebeians, that's the lower class. Now plebeians are given a place in the army. All the citizens capable of bearing arms were required to provide their own swords, spears, and other armor. So historically, you would have these kings, and these kings would have their armies, and their armies would be the only ones having weapons. But what if the kingdom is being attacked by a stronger force? Well, then the king has to make a decision. Do I let these common people have weapons too in order to defend against this outside attack? But if I let them have weapons, they could overthrow me. And so that was sort of the balancing point throughout history, is how much do I give up? There is Machiavelli, and he wrote on the art of war. He says, citizens, when legally armed, did the least mischief to any state. Rome remained free for 400 years and Sparta for 800 years, although their citizens were armed all the time. But many other states that have been disarmed have lost their liberty in less than 40 years. So,
wow.
These
wow.
examples of republics, ancient Rome, ancient Sparta, everybody's armed, everybody defends themselves, leaders rise up as needed. But ones where that you had a leader who's unpopular and he wants to take away the arms from the people, then his kingdom becomes vulnerable to outside attack.
Let me pause you right there, because let me back up what you said. I'm stunned by the statistic or the history you just gave about Sparta. Let me back up what you said about the ACLU. I find it so ironic that we let a bunch of lobbyists, money-driven, funded by God only knows what people, like you said, one person's offended. We let them use the Bill of Rights. Well, you're abrogating my rights. I mean, that's their argument. We're letting them use the Bill of Rights then to destroy the Bill of Rights. It's just, it's kind of a fascinating, ironic, and just terrible dynamic to me.
Yeah. Once you take away the arms, and this is something that Patrick Henry warned about, he said it goes against
logic. That's the quote of the day. William, you're right on. That's the quote of the day that I led the show with. Yeah. You want me to read it to you? I got it right here. You ready? Here, let me read it real quick. Guard with jealous attention the public liberty. Suspect everyone who approaches that jewel. Unfortunately, nothing will preserve it but downright force. Whenever you give up that force, you are inevitably ruined.
Yeah. Patrick Henry was brilliant. He really had an insight into how it all works. He writes this. When Virginia was sort of competing with New Hampshire as to who was actually going to be the one to be the ninth state to ratify it. And Patrick Henry was against the Constitution. And you think, why? Well, he said this, my great objection to the Constitution is that the preservation of our liberty depends on the single chance that men will be virtuous enough to make laws to punish themselves. In other words, once you have a disarmed populace, he says it goes against reason that those that have the arms would obey those that don't have the arms. And but
that's
one
simple,
of the other
it?
Quotes from Machiavelli, he writes this in The Prince. He says, an armed republic submits less easily to the rule of one of its citizens. And then India. We all know Mahatma Gandhi, the one who did those nonviolent protests in India. And he had India break away from the British Empire. And he said, among the many misdeeds of British rule in India, history will look upon the act of depriving a whole nation of arms as the blackest.
Wow.
So how did Britain take over India? Well, they first, interesting story, in the 1700s, a sailing ship lands, the king's ill, the guy knows a little medicine, he doctors the king and he recovers, and the king's grateful and gives him some gold and some clothes, and he says, anything else you want? And he said, yeah, I would like trading rights. He's like, oh, okay. And so this allowed Britain to have a landing spot to do trade with Bengal. But then once they did, they turned it from a trading post into a military post. And then they began this process of seeing that in the area of Bengal and India, you had hundreds of kingdoms. And they had reached an equilibrium, so sort of a balancing act. And the British would come in and give one kingdom guns. And then they would give the other kingdom guns. And then they would stir up ancient animosities between the two of them, and they would break out into war and fight themselves. And then the British would come to restore order, and they would take over both kingdoms and then disarm them. And then they would do it again, and they would stir up another, you know, and one by one by one, they ended up taking over all of India, a quarter of the world's population. Amazing. And they ruled the first century. Finally, they disarmed the whole country. And the people begged the Queen Victoria of England, said, hey, why should this British East India Company rule us? If we're going to be ruled, we want to be ruled by you personally. And so that's when she took it over, made it part of the British Empire. But the way they did it is they disarmed the population.
Wow.
And so that's what happened in colonial America with Thomas Gage coming in, wanting to disarm Patrick, Sam Adams and John Hancock and Lexington and Concord.
We got about a minute or so before the break. That was fantastic history about guns. Let me just, a side note about Patrick Henry, because I'm such a fan. His Give Me Liberty or Give Me Death speech, I think it's the greatest speech in American history. Do you agree with that? I mean, you're the right person to ask.
Right, and a whole lot of the Founding Fathers thought it was, too. Why? Because when he was speaking there to the Continental Congress, in Virginia, they were voting, they were on the verge of voting to make up with King George III.
Yeah, yeah.
And there were enough wealthy people that had money at stake in their businesses, and they were weighing their options.
Unbelievable.
And the king, it was sort of interesting, the king had, they sent over a petition saying, look, King, we're sorry, give in a little bit and we'll, we'll go back.
We'll make up. We'll kiss and make up.
Yeah. And the king, when he read it, he didn't respond. He just had a little smile on his face. And so that came back to America right before the Virginia Convention.
Wow.
And everybody's like, oh, he smiled. He's going to be nice to us. Well, they do this thing with Patrick Henry. They vote, they vote to stay independent. Well, the next day comes the news that he was smiling because he was sending troops over to smash us.
Unbelievable.
A wicked smile.
God, wow. Give me liberty or give me death. Stay tuned. More William Federer, AmericanMinute.com.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Break the bond of Big Pharma. Hi, it's Joyce Riley with the Power Hour to tell you about the powerful benefits of Strauss Heart Drops. Many people today are locked into the routine of taking multiple prescription drugs. Strauss Herb Company believes that everything the body needs is provided by nature. Strauss Heart Drops may clear congested arteries, restore damaged muscle, maintain healthy cholesterol levels, and flush toxins and metals from the body. They may even be helpful in treating varicose veins. And unlike prescription drugs that are packed with chemicals, Strauss Heart Drops are 100% natural and harness the healing power of herbs like garlic, cayenne, white willow bark, and mistletoe. For the full line of Strauss products, I urge you to call the Power Hour at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or visit thepowermall.com. And remember, beware of knockoffs. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops.
Boost your immune system naturally this year with oil of oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
Hi, this is Catherine at the Power Hour. The Power Mall began when Joyce Riley discovered an all-natural soap that heals skin issues and can replace your bathing, laundry, and household cleaning products. That soap is Miracle 2 and is made from natural minerals and coconut extract with no added fragrances or colors and is naturally concentrated and biodegradable. I guarantee after you discover how amazing Miracle 2 products are, you'll recommend them to everyone you know. To order, call 877-817-9829 or visit thepowermall.com today. You'll learn why so many people say, it's not just soap, it's a miracle.
With dozens of food and storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Humana Food Storage is nutritious, is GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemicals, preservatives, or soy. And Humana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. Call Jay at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or order online at thepowermall.com.
America made. Good for you. Food stores I love to eat. Yum.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiatics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams Probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
Ladies and gentlemen, your thoughts are things. You know, that's what science is starting to prove. Your energy, your passion, your dollars, where you spend them, it means something. Thank you for spending them with us over at the Power Mall, thepowermall.com. There's something for everybody over there. If you haven't bought in a while, or if you've never purchased from us, you're a new listener. Why not? Check it out, thepowermall.com. We got great specials, North American Urban Spice. Cass Ingram will be on later this week. And the detox, or not the detox, the clay, the bentonite clay from Perrier, among a host of other things, a variety of other things. Everybody needs to brush their teeth. Everybody needs mouthwash. And it's amazing what that type will do. The Vitamir, the mouthwash is amazing. And this is, it's really amazing what, how much of your health has to do with oral care. But anyway, I digress. Thank you for your purchases. Thank you for your support. High quality products, you know, are the original, you know, are, verifiable. Buy from the good guys. Thank you. ThePowerMall.com, 877-817-9829. We're getting back to one of my absolute favorite guests. He is, such an inspiration in so many ways. AmericanMinute.com is his website. He's written many books. I don't know quite which one to promote or which one you're working on now. I don't know, William. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you would like to promote? What book are you working on now?
Well, thank you. My website's AmericanMinute.com, and I send out a daily email called American Minute. We just did a new book called Miracles in American History, Volume 2. There's stories from our country's past where there's a crisis, they pray, things turn around, you know, famous battles and so forth, and also revivals. And so the first Great Awakening before the Revolutionary War, then the second Great Awakening with circuit riding preachers and the first black preachers in America. The first, you know, one of them was Black Harry Hoosier, and he traveled around with the Methodist preacher Francis Asbury. But Harry Hoosier was illiterate, but he would listen to the sermons and he would get up and say them verbatim and repeat the scriptures verbatim. And he'd be so eloquent that he would draw these huge crowds and thousands and thousands. And it was out in the Ohio woods in the western area. And just like the followers of Luther were called Lutherans, the followers of Harry Hoosier were called Hoosiers. And they gradually migrated over the Ohio River to Indiana, and that's where you get the Indiana Hoosiers from.
Wow.
And then there was another black preacher named John Stewart, and he was a dyer of clothes in the 1830s in Ohio. You know, you would drive blue jeans. And he was robbed of his life savings and went to the nearest town in Marion and was going to drink himself to death. One day he's walking in the woods and he hears singing. It's a camp meeting revival. And he goes and the Lord touches him and he begins to go there more and more. His drinking buddy friend says, oh, one last night of drinking. His friend dies that very day. And so he goes, okay, I'm not going to do that anymore. And the Lord tells him to walk northwest. And he just starts walking across hill and dale, wading across streams and creeks, and finally runs into the Wyandot Indian tribe. And they had never been reached by missionaries. And they were about to do an Indian dance. And he sings in his deep bass voice some of those Negro spirituals. And the Indians get quiet. When he finishes singing, one of them says, more. And he sings some more. Finally gets an interpreter, preaches the gospel. Eventually, the whole tribe gets saved. When the Democrats push through the Indian Removal Act, the Wyandot tribe decides to move to the Missouri River, and they name it their city Wyandot City, and a few years later, they change the name to Kansas City. So Kansas City, Missouri, wow, is still in Wyandot County, this Christian Indian tribe that was evangelized by this black guy, John Stewart. And then I go through the missionaries to Hawaii and Burma and the Caribbean, and so in the early 1800s, there's what's called the Second Great Awakening, and there are some Bible students in Williams College, Massachusetts, and they're walking across a field. It's the rain, cloud burst. They hide under a bale of hay and pray while they're getting out of the rain, and they decide to pray for world missions, and they decide to commit their lives to world missions. The rain stops. They go back to class. They tell all their students they committed their lives to world missions. Well, all the students are committing their lives. And the next 50 years, this group sends out, they started an American Foreign Mission Board. They send out 5,000 missionaries all around the world to China and Burma and Hawaii. And the first, you know, and so the countries like Burma and, you know, China, they trace their Christian heritage to these missionaries that came over at this time. And, you know, Adoniram Judson was a Baptist who went to Rangoon, Burma, and he translates the Bible, you know, in their language. And so he creates the first Burmese English dictionary that is still being used today. And
then I go through. Stunning, stunning.
There was 1857. Layman's Prayer Revival, New York. A guy named Jeremy Lanfear decides to put out a sign on the sidewalk saying, come and pray at lunchtime. And like one person comes, but the next week a dozen, the next week 100, by the end of the month thousands, and then they have multiple meetings with like 12,000 in New York praying every day at lunch, and then it goes to Chicago and Boston and New York and Los Angeles, all around the country, and thousands get saved, become Christians during this, but it's a layman's, it's not organized by any church or anything, it just happens. And one of the people that got touched during this time was D.L. Moody, a shoe salesman in Chicago. So he decides to start a Sunday school for little immigrant kids in the poor neighborhoods in an abandoned saloon. And it grows to 1,500 kids. And so Lincoln gets elected president. He goes from Springfield, Illinois to Chicago, and he visits D.L. Moody's Sunday school class. And with the thousands that are there, and afterwards, D.L. Moody says, well, Mr. President, do you have anything to tell these kids? And Lincoln says, well, if you do what this man tells you, you'll be just fine. Anyway, but he ends up preaching to millions across the country. And one of the places was the P.T. Barnum had his Barnum and Bailey Circus in New York. They had the great Roman Hippodrome Theater, and they let him use it on Sundays. And so he had 25,000 people meeting on Sundays. And then when they had the Chicago 1893 World's Fair, he goes there and you know, preaches to tens of thousands. And anyway, just fascinating stories of part of American history that people don't know about. But again, these are stories that are in this book. It's called Miracles in American History, Volume 2. We have first one has, you know, Revolutionary War battles and Civil War battles. It's also available on the website, AmericanMinute.com.
Fantastic. Let me ask you, going back to the founders that time, because we've been discussing public school a lot, and the public schools, you don't have to comment. I'm not trying to push you in a corner, but the stuff they're teaching is like, whoa, Our children are coming out of here, and they don't even know the Bill of Rights. They don't have a connection to our history. It's really sad. Please comment a little bit on the founders, their wish for public school. From my research, I see that it wasn't that religion wasn't supposed to be taught in school. They actually believed that a common religion, basically the basics of Christianity, were to be part of public school because that, like you said, that morality, you had to have that morality in the people for them to stay free. So they wanted and assumed and believed that some sort of religion / morality was going to be taught in public school. Address that if you would.
Right. So John Adams wrote the Constitution for Massachusetts in 1780. So it's 7 years older than our U.S. Constitution, and it's still in use. So Massachusetts Constitution is the longest still in use Constitution in world history. And in his Constitution, he has money set aside for the government to pay for Protestant teachers of piety and religion. And he goes on to explain, if we're not going to have a king who rules us through fear, then we're going to be a people that'll be ruled through virtue. It's like a teeter-totter. It's like you tell the kid, here are the car keys. You can come home whenever you want because I know you're going to do what's right. But if you don't do what's right, you're going to get pulled over by the police and thrown behind bars. So, teenager, you're going to be controlled either way, either voluntarily from the inside or forcibly from the outside. Same way with a nation. We're either going to be voluntarily controlled with internal morals, or we're going to teach our kids, give in to your passions and lusts. There's going to be chaos and insecurity for life and property, all kinds of crimes and killings, and everyone's going to cry out for the government to restore order, and the government comes in, takes away everybody's guns, takes away all your freedom, and yeah, they restore order, but when the dust settles, you transition back to a king. And so Montesquieu, in his Spirit of the Laws, 1741, even talks about this. He compares how in a virtuous country, the people are ruled internally. In a monarch or a despot, the people are ruled externally. And they're living in fear of offending some king or a despot. If they do what the king or the despot says, they get goodies. They get harems. They get titled sir, or they get an estate. So if you don't do what the king or the despot says, you are shamed, you get stripped of your class, and you get killed. And so it's all outside, but to have a republic, it's the people that are the king, and the people need to have internal morals and virtues. And so it's based on each person being educated. And anyway, so the founding fathers understood this. And this is so they had every colony was started by a different denomination, and they had their own school system. So Virginia was an Anglican colony. Massachusetts was Puritan. Rhode Island was Baptist. New York was Dutch Reformed. Delaware and New Jersey were originally Swedish Lutheran. Maryland was Catholic. Pennsylvania was Quaker. Connecticut, New Hampshire were Congregationalists. And they didn't get along. They tar and feather each other. But then they had to work together against the King of England during the Revolutionary War. After the Revolution, their attitude changed to, we may not always agree on religion, but you were willing to fight and die for my freedom. I need to let you practice your faith. And so they begin to tolerate each other. And but still, the school system was either in your home or it was within the denomination. And so Princeton was a Presbyterian school. Brown University was a Baptist school. Harvard was originally a Puritan school. You know, Yale was a Congregationalist school. You had, the different school systems set up, but it was just within the denomination. But then you had all these poor immigrants coming to America, filling up the inner cities of Boston, New York, and Philadelphia. And so the movement came, well, wait a second, we need to assimilate them. We need to teach them. We don't want to have it be under a denomination, but we want it to be general Christianity. And they would even use the term the general Christianity, where you have the King James Bible, you teach heaven and hell, and you know the Ten Commandments and so forth. And then it's interesting, there was an Irish potato famine, and millions of Irish Catholics came to America, and the Catholic percentage went from just 1% to 20%, so there was a backlash. And And so some of the religious wars that were going on in Europe, some of the leaders came over and began to continue the animosity. And so you had a situation in Boston where all the kids went to the, you know, the Latin school there, and they all, you know, would learn the Ten Commandments. And one of the Catholic boys wouldn't say the Ten Commandments in the Protestant order. I think I didn't know they had different orders. Yeah, the Catholics combined the first two and split the tenth, you know, explaining it one way. But that's basically, it's the same content. It's just numbered a little differently. And anyway, so this Catholic boy didn't say the Ten Commandments. He gets disciplined and he goes home, and the word spreads through his community, and the priest praises him. And the next time they do it, 200 Catholic boys refused to say the Ten Commandments in the Protestant order.
Oh, my God.
And
goodness.
Then they began to have demonstrations in the street. They didn't want the Our Father, because the Protestants added at the end of the Our Father, "For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever and ever. Amen." You think, this is a pretty minor thing. Yeah, but a lot of church splits are over minor things. So this demonstration, you had a convent raided in Boston, and you had stoning churches and setting churches on fire. And so what happened is that the Catholic Bishop of New York, Bishop John Hughes, pulls all the Catholic kids out of the public school system because it's Protestant, and he creates the parochial school system. And so now you have two school systems in America. You have the public school system, which is run by Protestants for the immigrant kids, and now you have a separate Catholic parochial school system. And this goes from the 1800s all the way for the next century and a half in the country. But it was in 1960, Madeleine Murray O'Hare, she was a communist. I know her son, Bill Murray. He grew up with her wanting to immigrate to the Soviet Union. He remembers taking a boat over to France, and they went to the Russian embassy and said, "We want to move to Russia." And they said, "You're crazy. You're not coming in." Anyways, they go back. They get off the boat in Baltimore. And the mother, Madeleine Murray O'Hare, puts him, Bill Murray, into the public school. She sees him praying and reading the Bible in the classes. She brings a lawsuit. And she gets millions of dollars from atheists around the country, and they push this lawsuit. And finally, the ACLU helps them, and they get prayer out of the public schools. And then the next year, they get Bible reading out of the public schools. And what happened was, you know, the Catholics said, well, you know, we didn't want the Protestant stuff taught anyway. And the Protestants got upset one time because a Catholic nun was teaching and wearing her nun outfit, and they said, even if she does a good job, she's going to be tempting these kids to want to follow her example and become Catholic. Anyway, because of the Catholic-Protestant controversy, they let it slide, and they said, okay, just do your religious stuff at home. We won't have it in the public school. And they had no clue what was coming next. Not only did the secularists come in, but they outlawed the Christian. Then they began to teach that Christianity is bad. Then they began to bring in all kinds of alternative sexual things and abortion and transgendered. And
evolution.
And now they're pushing the anti-Christian agenda and saying that if you hold to your Christian views, you're hateful. It's Christian privilege. It's white privilege. And then comes on the heels of that Islam. And now they're wanting to bring in their Sharia into the and saying, well, it's cultural. We're going to have all these kids practicing Muslim prayers because it's cultural. And it's like, how come we can't do the old Christianity is a, you know, separation of church state can't have that. But this is cultural. So they sneak under the radar. And now they're Islamifying these public schools. It's an interesting study to see how this has happened.
Hey, you mentioned the Catholic. I can't remember his name that you said. This is fascinating history. Some of this I knew. A lot of it I didn't. The Catholics pulled all the Catholics out of the public school system. Where in the world are the preachers in California, specifically other states, but California, about all this, you know, teaching 4 and 5 year olds damnable things? I'm not even going to repeat them on the air, and the sexual things and what have you. Where are the preachers to say, that's it, we're all of you out of school? Where are they?
There are some, and I applaud them and encourage them. The mainstream media, which is setting the tone in so many of these places, is firmly in the pocket of pushing this agenda. Hollywood is pushing this agenda. So it's, you know, an interesting study. was done. It's called the Ash Conformity Study, ASCH. In the 1950s, after World War II, a Nazi propagandist who, got out, started working in the universities in America. And so this conformity study is where they would have eight students in a room. Seven were paid actors. One was a naive participant. And they put two cards on the teacher's desk. One had one line on it, and the other had three lines on it. And one of the three lines was exactly the same length as the card with the one line. And then on the three, one was longer, one was shorter. It was pretty obvious which was the phone that was the same length. Well, they went around the room and they asked the students which of the three are equal to the one on the one. And they would start with the paid actors, and they would get up and give a very convincing argument why the shorter one was actually equal to it. And another one would get up and say the same thing, and another one would get up and say, finally get around to the naive participant. And 30% of them would deny their own eyes because they wanted to fit in with the group. They would conform to the group. They would deny their own because this, they would doubt their perception. They would doubt their views. They would not want to stand out. Now, if just one of the others, disagreed, then it goes from 30% down to 5%. But there's such a strong desire to fit in with the group. Little kids want to fit in wearing the right tennis shoes and having the right sneakers. But now it's gone online with social media. And so everybody fits in with the group.
And then they censor the group. And then they censor the group. They censor what is said. So you think, and your perception is, well, everybody believes this. I guess everybody's a socialist now, because they don't let conservatives or Republicans or whatever. Republicans meaning constitutionalists. That's what I meant by that, not their party. But they don't let constitutionalists speak up. So now everybody's a socialist. So we got to all fit in with them, I guess.
Right. So there was a guy, Robert Epstein, who was working for Google as an executive, and he talked about the influencing of elections. So you have those who are going to vote Democrat no matter what, Republican no matter what, and the undecideds. Undecideds don't keep up with politics because they're undecided. And so when it comes to an election time, what do? A Google search. 90% of all internet searches worldwide are done on Google. And so Google can set the algorithms as to what results are pulled up. So you put in a name, right? Maybe Trump. It'll pull up everything anti. You put in another name, maybe Hillary, and it pulls up all these positive articles. And he said that he was convinced that at least 3 million voters voted for Hillary as a result of this. And he said he was even a Democrat, and he even voted for Hillary. But he said his fear was that algorithms are going to determine all future elections, because so many of these elections are won by small margins. And so it goes back to wanting to fit in. Why do you do a Google search? I want to see what's everybody saying about this candidate. I don't want to go to work the next day and say I'm for somebody that everybody thinks is stupid, right? So, again, it's this Ash conformity study. You want to fit in with the group. And so whoever controls the perception of what's acceptable in the group, kings did this. They would call it honor shame cultures, where a king would honor somebody and shame another. And so everyone would want to dress the same way the king dressed and wear their hair the same way the queen wore her hair. They would set what's acceptable in the group, the behavior. And if you weren't, and so we see that today where they come in one day and they say, okay, from now on, we're going to come up with this new sexual thing. And then the next day it's something different. Next day it's something different. Next day it's something. And you just immediately learn to throw away all your values, and you just say, whatever the newest thing is, I'm going to go along with it.
We got
and you
about
become this mushy, manipulated,
with no conviction, no conviction at all, and easily manipulated. Yeah, we got about 2 minutes to go before we were going to talk about the IRS and the history of the income tax today. And I told people, let me just ask you a quick question. Is it true, from, I think, what is it, 1916, 1913, Federal Reserve, 1916, the quote unquote income tax act, up until World War II, wasn't the amount of filers in America like 8 or 9%? I mean, I don't remember. Isn't it some insanely low amount that it did not apply to most of America?
Right. So I did a book called The Interesting History of Income Tax. And prior to the Civil War, there was no income tax. Federal government was supported by basically tariff taxes on salty tobacco.
The right.
problem was the tariffs that helped the northern factories hurt the southern agricultural economy, and so you had the South objecting. In fact, 90% yeah. of the federal budget was at one point funded by the South. Anyway, Woodrow Wilson pushes through the first income tax, 1913, a 1% tax on the top 1% richest people. FDR, during World War II, he ups it and makes most of the country pay the income tax, and this starts outsourcing. And so you can have business owners say, gee, I can avoid all these taxes and build my factory in some other country. The outsourcing companies got big and would spend money lobbying politicians to let more outsourcing take place until finally we gutted our entire industrial sector of our economy. You know, they had little pictures of a little kid riding a donkey, holding the carrot in front of the donkey, you know.
Wow.
You put a financial incentive in front of something and everything's going to move in that direction. Prior to World War II, only a very small percentage of people paid income tax. And there's an interesting quote that I have from John F. Kennedy. And he talked about how...
Turn that music down, please,
Todd. We need to get tax cuts so that we can rebuild our factories, so we can compete with these factories that outsourced over to Europe. And if people have more money to spend because we've got taxes, they'll spend it. We'll hire more workers to meet the increased demand. And
wow.
we'll get rid of unemployment.
There's the music. William, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. AmericanMinute.com is the website. It's got a variety of books about income tax. The Miracles of America are fantastic. I have the first edition. I don't have your second volume, but the first one is great. It's a pleasure. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll see you tomorrow. We got a bang-up lineup. Stuart Rhodes is going to pop in, update about Virginia, Sheriff Mack, and James McKinney all on tomorrow. God bless you. Happy, healthy, successful, and free as God intends you to be. That's what we want.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams Probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.